moving to New York can be summed up in four words: by any means necessary. There is a certain crazy chip in someone's brain that makes us all move here and stay here no matter what, as though this is an island that we have to stay on or else we die, even though we all have other options, but we really don't, because we're all crazy and we know we have to be here, we have to be New Yorkers. My guest today, Tim, definitely embodies this. Tim...
laughing already.
If you hear music or birds, it's because we're in a park in Harlem right now, folks. Okay, so just bear with us. And it's like you're with us here in this beautiful park on this
St. Nicholas Park, baby.
That's right. Our coordinates are, for those of you who want to meet us, no, I'm just kidding. So, Tim, first tell me, I'm going to ask you three questions. What was your date you moved here? How did you get here? And where'd you come from?
I moved here like September 2002. I moved here from Boston. And what was the third question?
How'd you get here?
By car.
Whose car?
I think we packed up
a getaway car.
I think we packed up my mom's car. Mm-hmm. With like my belongings. I didn't have a lot of belongings. I had like, I think, $200 or $300 and my belongings.
You had $200 or $300? That's it?
Yes. And a credit card.
Oh, okay. Credit cards are key.
Yeah.
Why? What were you doing in Boston? Why did you decide to come here?
Initially, I always wanted to be in New York City since I was young. I was also into music. That was like my first creative outlet, was writing poetry, music, singing. And I really tried to pursue that more than anything when I moved to New York. I had a vocal coach and... I was writing an album. I think I wrote two albums, which I never really shared with anyone. And I never really finished recording it because the technology isn't as easy as it is today. Mixing voice with music is a very tricky production.
Yeah. So you move here. Your mom drives you?
Yeah, I think my mom and I drove. We probably took turns.
Okay. Did you have an apartment?
I had an apartment. It was a...
How'd you get it?
I came to New York prior, apartment hunting, and I found on West 63rd Street, right behind...
Whoa.
Yeah, right behind Lincoln Center, I found a basement studio apartment for like $1,000.
What was your plan? Did you have a job?
Well, I was going to be looking for a job.
Okay. So you moved here with $200, $1,000 rent, and no job? You really believe in yourself,
I was teaching photography to kids on the weekend. So, I would take the, you know, Fonghua, whatever, Chinatown bus, and go to Boston on the weekends and teach the kids photography. But that wasn't enough either. So I started looking for restaurant jobs, and no one wanted to hire me because I didn't have any New York experience. And I worked at a diner called Tiffany's for like a day. That was like torture.
And I said, what about working at Tiffany's? She said, I think I remember that day.
Yeah, not that Tiffany's, unfortunately.
Okay, so a day at Tiffany's, random restaurant jobs. How much are you making, like, per week?
I don't know. Not enough.
Yeah.
You know, my mom would help me out when I needed help.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any friends here?
I had one friend. I had one friend that lived in Brooklyn.
Ooh.
And he was so crazy and aloof. And, he had some situations that I've discovered with, you know, drugs and stuff. So there was a New Year's. That New Year's, I said, our friendship's just over. Like, you're just crazy.
The New Year's you moved here, you broke up with your only friend?
Yes.
New Year, new you. New Year, only you. So then what did you do? Like, how did you survive?
Okay, to survive, I started, you know, doing these little gigs like... video editing. I worked for like a little documentary firm, they pay me like virtually nothing. A lot of times I was working just for food, like they would pay me, you know, for lunch or whatever.
Whoa, it's kind of illegal.
Yeah, I mean, it was
unless you're getting college credit, you have to get paid for an internship. Oh. Just to let you know.
Okay, well.
Class action lawsuit.
So, yeah, no, and then I got stuck, you know. I was like, I'm not moving back, you know.
Were you able to pay rent?
I had some back rent.
Uh-huh.
And,
yeah, that happens to everyone here.
But my mom, you know, my mom stepped in and helped me out.
That's nice.
But I'm like, I can't always let her help me. Like, yeah. I got to do this on my own. And someone had offered me a opportunity to make money and to make a lot of money, becoming a male escort. So I changed careers a little bit. I mean, I still taught the kids yoga or taught the kids photography on the weekends. But
where was that?
That was in Boston.
Okay. So you're traveling to Boston. So you're getting paid in Boston still.
Yeah, I'm getting paid in Boston.
Uh-huh.
Actually.
How was that?
I actually did come to New York with a job in mind. Uh-huh. I was supposed to teach kids photography at Parsons.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pulled the photography program after I had moved here.
Oh, lovely.
But I was like, you know, I'm here. I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
You know? I wasn't moving for the job per se. I just wanted a good job when I got here.
Okay, so who offered you? How'd you get involved in this male escort thing? Who did you meet? That you don't have to name names, but how did you meet this person?
This person approached me online.
Okay.
And said,
"What do you mean online? Where online?"
Oh God! Then come on.
All right, fine. You have an online presence.
An online presence, and said, "You know, you might be good at this."
Given your pictures.
And it was something that kind of scared me. Uh-huh. And I don't know what it is. I go towards fear. Like, if something scares me, I got to figure out why it scares me. That's why I photograph landfills. Like, it scared the hell out of me to go walk into a landfill in a third world country.
Was landfill your code name online as a male?
Oh, my God.
Okay, all right. Enough laughing at my own joke. even though props, yeah. Pat on the back for that one. So this guy approaches you, and you're terrified. But you're like, I need money. I have back rent. Mommy can't help me anymore, for I'm sure. And it mixes two things I love, money and sex.
Yeah.
So then what? Who is your first client? And how
like
did
how you sum that up for me. Thanks.
I tried to make it easy for my guest. Okay, so, no, but really.
So, yeah, no, I worked for an agency at first before I moved on to working for myself.
Thank you, Beyonce. Leaving Destiny's Child. Going solo. No, I want to know the details. He approaches you. How long do you think it over?
I said, let's try it next week.
This scares the shit out of me. Are you available right now? And who'd you try it with? Like, how did it work? Did he get a cut or what?
Yeah, like, he got a third, I think.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, that they put me, they take pictures of me and put me up on this website. And then, you know.
Cowboys for Angels, like the gigolos from Showtime. That's what it's called, Cowboys for Angels. This would be Cowboys for Cowboys. It'd be
Angels for Cowboys. Devils for Cowboys. But, the first one was this guy. He was from Long Island. He was like.
Was he straight?
Italian.
Like, was he straight in public?
I don't know too much of his private details, but I think he was married.
To a woman.
To a woman, yeah. and an older man, mustache, like totally ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you go to his place?
I went to a hotel room.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them were in hotel rooms. I mean, like this, you know, I did it for a little while, so the stories vary in
and
location.
And I want to hear every single.
Oh, God. You don't want to hear every. Some of them are really scary.
Okay, so were they nice hotel rooms?
No.
Oh.
Well, no. I have been in, like, the dodgiest, like, you know, by-the-hour type of hotel. And I've been in the Park Plaza Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, penthouses and, you know. So it's a variety.
You embody New York, which is the trash bin up to the Mandarin Oriental, and they can all be next to each other. How did it work? This guy got in touch with you and said, this is where you go, this is how much you get paid. Do you collect the money?
I collect the money unless they paid with credit card. and then I pick it up at the office, but you know.
Is credit card legal? Or is this is legal, isn't it? It's a legal company.
I think so.
Okay. So you collect the money and then you have to give this agency a third.
Yep.
How do you do that? You just show up and drop it off?
Yeah, I show up. I see the guy. He lives in an apartment in Midtown. I just, you know, I give him his cut, and then I keep my cut. Mm-hmm.
So this is not a loaded question at all? At all. No, I'm
Sounds
serious.
Sounds like one already.
No, it's not. After the first John, or whatever, the first date, how did you feel about yourself? Or how did you feel about the situation?
Well, you know, there were a variety of experiences, and, you know, when I was able to work for myself, I could be very choosy about who I saw, and I could keep regulars. So if I like someone, that is totally like, I saw one guy, he just wanted to cuddle.
Really?
Yeah. And
I'll cuddle with someone for $500.
he would have me overnight, and I can't remember how much that was, but it was... It was about $1,300 or $1,400, you know? But, I mean, that's a good client. So, but I've
that's
had...
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's rent and, like, electricity and cable
that's,
in one night.
That's how I took care of myself for a while.
Took care of a lot of other people, too. No, okay, but I'm...
Well, I thought about it that way, too. I thought, like, I was providing a service, like, you know, in the world. And I was... It wasn't the most, like, respected thing by others, but I wasn't afraid of judgment, and I was just going to have to do what I needed to do.
Did you tell people around you what you were doing?
No, I lied and I said that I was a video editor, which I was.
A what editor?
A video editor.
Oh.
And I was editing like B-rated movies and little shorts and whatever, but that wasn't my main income.
But like that, when you popped your escort cherry, did you have no feelings? Were you
right.
like...
So afterwards, I felt bad about myself, but then I had, you know...
Money.
A couple hundred dollars in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, this can take me further.
Yeah.
And I didn't go crazy with it. I said, I'm just going to do what I need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to go go crazy or be really selfish about the money. I'm just going to do what I need, and that's it.
How many per week did you do?
I didn't go that crazy with it. I've known people to do a couple a day.
Ooh.
I did like a couple a week.
Uh-huh.
You know,
just to survive.
Just to survive, just to get through, you know. That was it. I wasn't, you know.
So because you moved here to do media and photography and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like if that didn't work out here, you still wanted to stay here. So obviously, was there a bigger reason you wanted to be here? You just didn't want to go back to Boston, right? You just knew you had to be here, and you knew you could have opportunities later. It just wouldn't come easy. Was that right? Because
yeah.
I guess what I'm getting at is I applied to graduate school in New York just so I'd have an excuse to tell people why I was here. But in reality, mm-hmm. in my mind, I wanted to be here,
mm-hmm.
and I would stay here whatever it took.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're the same way.
Yeah, I mean, like, I wanted to be in New York. I wanted that experience. I wanted that freedom.
Yeah.
There's so much diversity and stuff going on here. It's worth it, you know?
Yeah.
And I value all the experiences I've had. If they're positive or negative, they've all, you know, they've all taught me lessons. And depending on how I react to that, it sculpts a little bit of who I am today.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of who I am right now.
Yeah, I'm proud of who you are, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm open about that part of my life now because it was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it was something I did to, you know, get by. And, you know, this is the interview and I just tell it like it is.
Yeah.
And some people may not like to hear it or they don't want to see me in that light. But, you know, that's just the reality of what was going on at that time.
It's funny because your actual media job was in Boston. Your photography job.
Yeah, I know. I know, right?
So, when did you go off on your own?
I think after, like within a year, mm-hmm. I started working for myself. I put up a website and, you know,
mm-hmm. Were you still living on 63rd Street?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever run into any of them?
You mean now?
Yeah, like, did you ever see them outside of the workplace?
There's like a very small handful, like, mm-hmm. like maybe two guys mm-hmm. that I still would see to this day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But not like that.
Just not like that, yeah, no.
See.
When I was done with that, I was done.
Yeah.
Like, the people would try to call me, and I changed my phone number.
Oh, wow.
Not because they were harassing me or anything, just because I'm like, I'm seriously done. Even if I needed the money, I didn't go back to it. Because mm-hmm. when I made the decision to stop, it was, like, for good.
Were you transitioning to another field while you were doing this?
I was transitioning into, like, unlegit massage.
Isn't that what you were doing?
Except you don't get paid as much because, you know. And then
is unlegit massage?
You're not
a certified massage?
Yeah, I'm not a certified massage therapist, but I was doing massage for a while. And then that's...
On what? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the whole body, but... So, yeah, then after that, during this time, I was doing yoga, and I was always really good at yoga, and there was someone in my life who presented an opportunity to get me out of what I was doing and offer me a real job as a yoga instructor. So he's like, you know, you have that talent, and you have that teaching background, you know, I can give you this if you want to take it. And
give what? Like...
A job.
Really?
Teaching yoga.
But didn't you have to get certified?
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I at that time I said, okay, well, you know, I did my certification and then I, you know, I was ready and I just started teaching.
He's like a fairy godfather.
Yeah.
This guy. He really steered you into a whole new world.
Yeah, he knows that. And I thank him to this day for doing that for me because that was all I needed was that that connection to the next best path, you know. I was still writing music, but I was slowly getting, like, letting go of the dream of becoming like a musician or a musical artist.
What kind of music were you doing?
It was like electronic, rock, maybe a little bit of hip hop in there. But
were you singing?
Yeah, I was singing and I was writing the music and the lyrics, and I had a website and. The band was called Bully.
Oh, right.
And then I, you know, I slowly let go of that. I focused on fitness. And then I was teaching like 20 classes a week. And I was a spin instructor and abs and stretch and yoga. That was my new life. Uh-huh. And I was very grateful for it. Because now I was giving something to people and not having to feel ashamed for it. But mm-hmm. rather feeling proud of it, mm-hmm. you know.
You're helping rooms of people better their day and their health.
I didn't have to hide it. And I could have more confidence and dignity in myself because for a while it was like I was afraid people were going to find out about my past. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, oh, what if they find out? And now it's like...
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter.
You did what you had to do.
I did what I had to do and like... You know, and I'm proud of what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Like if I died, like, right now, I would be, like, I know that I left a good note behind myself, mm-hmm. you know, for others. Good. If I died being an escort, that would have been a sad note to leave behind.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not really you.
It's not really me.
Yeah, it's just something, it seems like it's something you just had to do to pay rent.
I think I'm a good lover. Like, I give love, you know?
Yeah.
And that love can come in the form of, you know, photography, music, being a boyfriend, being a teacher, you know, being an escort, whatever it is. Yeah. So I think it's just, you know, love is love, and you just gotta find the best way to channel it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it doesn't seem to me like you have anything to be ashamed of. Mm. You did what you had to do, and had you not stuck it out and done this thing that you couldn't talk about, you might not have ever even become a yoga teacher because you may have not had the opportunity to meet that guy and, mm-hmm. and go on that path.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you're at peace mm-hmm. with it and you don't regret it. But if you'd left, you might have regretted not trying to make it in New York.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
don't you think?
Absolutely. My life would not be so enriched had I just not tried to be here.
Yeah.
And do whatever it took to stay here.
Yeah. So when did you get back to photography? Because like you, like, I had to dog walk and do all this stuff to, mm-hmm. like, stay here. I just had to do a lot of stuff that wasn't related to why I even moved here in the first place or what I thought I was moving for. And it took me a while to get back to what I wanted to do, like writing and mm-hmm. media and all that. When did you get back to starting? Because you also, we haven't even covered how much you love traveling and right. photographing other cultures.
Yeah, I took a hiatus from photography for a while. And it was at some point that I felt inspired to start again. And it was triggered because of a yoga retreat I took in Guatemala. So I was going to Guatemala and I said, I'm going to buy myself a really nice camera. And it was like a $500 camera. It wasn't even like, you know, something like I use today. But in my eyes at that time, it was what I could afford. And I thought, wow, you know. And so I went to Guatemala, and because of my education in photography and everything, the pictures, you know, they came out really nice, and everyone was saying, this has to be in a gallery, this is so good, you know. And I said to myself, like, I got bit by that bug again, you mm-hmm. know, like, and from that time on, I've never put down my camera. Like, I mean, I don't.
When was this, Guatemala?
This is like 2005 or 2006 or okay. something like
so
that.
So like 3 or 4 years into your time here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so I mean, like, I don't photograph all the time because I'm very choosy about my topics. And, you know, I did Guatemala, I did Peru, Costa Rica, all these Latin countries, and trying to find a subject that I felt passionate about. And it wasn't until I explored a landfill in Nicaragua that I fell in love with the topic of landfill activity and landfill life, with people living from landfills and the environment. And now everything I do is devoted towards that project and that cause. As mm-hmm. you know, I'm making this a global project, doing Haiti and Venezuela, and then next year I'm going to go through Asia and do Bangladesh and India and hopefully Bhutan and other places.
What is a landfill project? Like, because what you've seen is completely surprising. I think it would be very surprising how people live. People actually live in these landfills. There's like villages, right?
Yeah.
And what was the first landfill? How did you even come to it?
I was ironically just looking at a guide, like, you know, one of those basic like travel guides, and it had this tiny little caption, like a little blurb, like a side note about something in Managua, and it said,
which is where?
Managua is the capital of Nicaragua.
Okay.
And it said, you know, this is a place called La Chureca, and it's, you know, a landfill where people live. And all I saw was La Chureca and a landfill where people live, and I'm like, what's that? So I look up La Chureca, and it was up on Wikipedia, and had a real simple picture and some basic information, and I was like, okay, this is one of the places I have to explore. Because I witnessed like cockfight, exorcism, you know, I did like female wrestlers. I was trying to find some like innovative, interesting topic in Nicaragua, and that was definitely on the list. And when I first went in there with my friend, it was a very scary experience. You don't know what's going to happen. But the very first photograph I took was of two little boys, Felix and Jose Huertas Lopez. And that picture I took was the very first picture I took in a landfill. And it got on like a national tour, and it was in this contest, and it was in the top 30 in international tour and everything. So it made me realize this is a really important topic. But it was the feeling that I had when I took that photograph. My heart was beating. I wanted to cry, but I felt so excited. And the boys' smiles, they're smiling at me, like comforted me at the same time. And I had this feeling, I was like, this is it. Whatever this is it, you know?
This is where you belong.
This is where I belong. And it was just from taking that picture of the boys.
How did you come up on the landfill? Did you get a guided tour? Did you just show up?
I just showed up.
How big is it?
I think it's about 3.5-4 square miles.
That's pretty brave of you.
It's the biggest landfill in Central America.
How many people live there?
1,800.
Oh my God. Do they have schools there?
They have a small school there.
Where do they sleep?
This is the thing is, I recorded this project before, during, and after the Spanish government came in. Before, they used to just sleep in huts. They make huts out of plastic and wood and debris and things that they find.
Find in this garbage dump.
Yeah, okay. Find in the garbage dump. Like, when you look inside their homes, everything you find in there is from the garbage.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's like a doll without an arm or whatever. Then the Spanish government came in and started to transform it and clean it up and make it into a methane gas to energy project. And then they were making a factory so that, you know, these people were going to lose their income and their livelihood. So they said, okay, we're going to make you...
What's their income?
Their income is like less than a dollar a day. They sort out all the glass, all the plastic, and the metal. The metal's most valuable. Mm-hmm. And then they take that and they sell it to someone at the entryway.
Oh.
Someone at the entryway takes that and brings it to a company, and the value of the material goes up as it leaves the landfill. When they bring it to the company bundles it all up and they send it out to like another country or another place where they have a facility that is capable of chopping up all of the plastic into little pellets. And there's two different types of plastic, so it might be a larger pellet or a smaller pellet. And they make that into like plastic cubes or plastic like bricks. And then they sell those plastic bricks back to like Coca-Cola or whoever wants to buy it.
What did the Spanish government then do for these people whose income they were taking away?
They provide a sorting factory with a minimum wage. So now they're...
Which is how much?
I don't know. I'm going back to Nicaragua in 2 weeks, and I'm going to record the result of everything. Because I'm going to see if they got... If they provided enough jobs for people, which I believe they did not. I'm going to see how much they get for their minimum wage.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. Because in America, what is it, $7 an hour?
It's $7.25.
So it can't... I mean, I'd be surprised if it was near that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be in Cordobas, so the value is going to be different.
Yeah.
And then they provided homes for them, so now they actually have, like, a real concrete home.
Huh.
And every time I go back, I always photograph those same boys and their family. And the mother now is, I think she's 27 years old. She's 3.5 months pregnant with her fifth child. But they moved from this hut that they photographed them in to an actual concrete home with, like, you know, gated windows and refrigerator and bathroom and bedroom and living room.
So the Spanish government built all these next to the landfill?
Yep, not next to it, but nearby.
How did the people... Do you think the people transition easily, or do you think they were just used to their life? Or
some people definitely have a hard time transitioning because... You have to imagine that these people have been living there since 1972. And the reason why they did move there was because of a major earthquake. And there were so many refugees and not enough help that they migrated to the area where they put all the debris from the earthquake. 80% of the city was destroyed because of the earthquake. So you have all this extra debris and all these homeless people. So they all migrated there and it became the landfill that we know it today. And... In 1972 to now, there's another generation of people. So you have people that were born and raised without an ID or a cedula, they call like a work permit or any real identity to Nicaragua at all. So you suddenly give them a home and they don't know how to react to that. So they want to take that home and they want to sell it. Or they want to, you know, do something because they don't know how to hold on to something.
I wonder how many people are still in the landfill.
I'm going to find out in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear about this.
I noticed less, like before you'd have like a lot of deposits where they put the trash. And the last time I went, like last year, whenever it was, there was, I think, just two or three deposits. So at this point, there may be no deposits, which means that the trash goes directly to a recycling, the recycling factory, rather than it actually going out in the open landfill area.
Why did the Spanish government move in?
The ambassador of Spain did a tour through Latin America, and she's like an eccentric, cool person. And she felt compassion for that, for them, and decided, you know, this is, I have, you know, a grant. I think it was a $50 million grant or something like that. And that would provide this, you know, methane gas to energy project. So, I mean, I don't know what sort of income is going to come out of it, like what kind of commodity. But I think it's a good model to show other places. The problem with methane gas energy projects and landfills and stuff is the commodity is very is a very on a small margin. So you have to be very patient and like wait a very long time before you start seeing a profit being taken from it.
This is fascinating. When you first got there, did you feel dangerous? You're there with a camera alone?
Yeah. No, I was like, my heart was beating out of my chest. I thought, oh my God, I made a mistake. We got to turn around. I had to beg my friend to go. And he said, I'm not going there. Like, my family's going to kill me. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go by myself. And then he said, okay, I can figure this out. So he got his uncle, his aunt, and his cousin. And we went in two cars. And we didn't stay that long. We drove in through the entrance to where we saw the landfill, because it's big. We didn't go to the other side or anything. That would have been dangerous.
There's like a bad side and a good side?
Well, just you would have been immersed in the middle of it.
Yeah.
We went to like the front of it and starting to go into it. I mean, we went into it, but like if we drove a mile into it...
How tall are the heaps of garbage?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they've been measured, but like I would say it would be taller than my building.
How tall is your building?
It's like five flights. It's just been collected there since the 70s. So
looking back, like you, 11 years you've been here. How are you different than when you moved here?
I see things more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And I value things in a different way, and I see the path I'm supposed to be on, and I'm on it.
That's so amazing. Do you think it has to do with coming here?
Yeah, because I knew it was my destiny
to be here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's all about being in New York. It's that this is a place where it was going to bridge me into my right path.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
I agree with that. It's the place you go to become yourself or something. People like ask you what your rent is here. I've gotten used to it, but like no one in Boston asks what people pay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like not. It's tacky. If you ask like, what do you do for work and how much is your rent? And here it's like, we gotta know.
Yeah, we gotta know, because we gotta know if we gotta kill you, be jealous of you.
I gotta know if I gotta date you or
not.
No.